Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to had to wake up the studio band there a little bit. Well, today we're going to talk about songs of love and loss and the band that must not be named. Plus, we have a surprise guest. This is going to be a great show today in honor of Cesar Chavez. Today is the Cesar Chavez Day, so don't go away. From Los Angeles, California, the music capital of America, it's Music Friday Live, brought to you by World Arts, a global stage for artists, fans, and the music industry, and by MySanFelipeVacation.com for the time of your life on the Sea of Cortez. I'm your host, Patrick O'Heffernan. I have a little bit of a cold today, so every now and then you may hear me cough, although I'm going to try to hit the cough button whenever possible. But remember, our guests are here to talk with you, so you can call in 347-215-7511, or you can email us. You know, if you're at work and you can't call, email us, musicfridaylive@gmail.com. And right now, we have a surprise guest. Hi there.
Surprise!
Yay.
Hi. How are you?
Who is Allison? I just great, Allison, and I'm so looking forward to Girls Rock LA tonight, and you're headlining too.
It's gonna be a magical night. I mean, these bands, these people, the art, the reason we're all getting together. It's just in downtown LA, which I mean is very close to home for me, It's gonna be a wonderful night, and I'm just really grateful that Halo Circus gets to be a part of it. I'm so excited.
Well, let's tell everybody about it. Tonight is the 7th edition of Girls Rock LA, which is the Los Angeles edition of the national organization Girls Rock. It's being held at the 333 Club, 333 Live, and that's at 333 Boylston Street in downtown L.A. Halo Circus is headlining, but also we have Los Hollywood, great bilingual rock and roll. We have Stars at Night and Canvas, and this is a gathering of people who speak all languages, who really love music, and I'm so glad you're going to be part of it. So are we going to hear anything special from you tonight, Allison?
Well, we're definitely going to hear some Spanish and English. I'll tell you that. I heard you were getting freshened up on your Spanish. How you doing with your Spanish?
Muy bien, muy bien.
Muy bien.
Yeah, muy bien. Yo estudio español, pero mi español no tan bien. But it will get better.
Está bien, está bien. I can understand you. And it's when my parents used to say when I was growing up, sometimes my Spanish would be mucho, which means like not so great, because when you're learning English and Spanish, it turns into Spanglish. But anyway, I mean, look, this whole night, for it to be based on just culture, and love for music and art, and in downtown LA, I'm honored. And Los Hollywood, Stars at Night, Canvas, I'm a huge fan of all these bands. So I'm really excited to get to actually meet them in person and to tell them how much I just freaking love them. It's gonna be wonderful.
Yeah, it is. And we should remind everybody that doors open at 8 o'clock. Music starts at 9, you know, 8-ish
to
9.
And it's free, right? From 8 to 9, if you get there?
That's right. It's free from 8 to 9, and then after 9, it's only $10. So,
it's,
you know,
only $10, so come on.
Yeah, you can't do better than this. So that's
no.
Girls Rock LA, headlining with Halo Circus and also Los Hollywood and Stars at Night and Canvas. It's at the 333 Live Club, and I want everybody to be there. 8 o'clock, doors open, 9 o'clock music. And if you come tonight, you can meet Allison and also the rest of the band too. Allison, thank you so much for calling in, and we'll see you tonight and give you a big hug.
I can't wait. Thank you, man. Looking forward
Bye-bye
to
now.
It. Bye.
Well, we're going to take a quick break right now, and we're going to introduce our affiliates. But first of all, I want to tell everybody about World Arts, which is one of our broadcast partners. Don't go away.
World Arts brings the entire music world together on one global stage. We give artists the tools to sell and license their music, interact with industry pros, and play live to a whole new audience. Wherever they are on their journey, we want artists to get paid for what they create. At World Arts, fans can discover new songs, get exclusive rewards, and crowdfund projects for artists. Brands can offer opportunities for artists to create original content that fans can instantly vote on and share. World Arts is the global music platform where we can all rise above the noise. Take your career to the next level. Discover new artists. At World Arts, it's all about the music.
And we're back. I'm Patrick O'Heffernan, host here of Music Friday Live, and welcoming all of our listeners on the CyberStationUSA.com network and all the radio affiliates that they push our program out to, and also to the Artist Echoes Network in London, who are going to be hearing us tonight in on their network in London, England. So hi, London. If you have questions or comments for our guests, you can call in 347-215-7511. If you're, at work and you can't call in, I got it. Or if you're listening to us on a podcast, send us an email, musicfridaylive@gmail.com. It's musicfridaylive@gmail.com. And if you're on a podcast, we'll forward it on to our guests. And speaking of guests, if you Google the phrase all Asian rock band, the first name that comes up is The Slants, which is appropriate because they are the first and only all Asian American dance rock band in the world. Their fast tempo synth combined with melodic vocals of their lead singer have moved crowds in venues and cons throughout 22 national tours and 7 albums, EPs, and mixtapes. Their music, in a word, is addictive. But there is another reason why The Slants also topped the Google list. They have taken their fight for the rights of minority communities all the way to the United States Supreme Court. The case is Lee versus Tam, which argues that they have a right to name themselves The Slants. Who knows? You have to go to court for that. Well, the case is now pending, which is why they're also known, at least for now, as the band that must not be named. And we are so proud to have the Tam of Lee versus Tam with us today, the founder of The Slants, Simon Tam. Welcome, Simon.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Well, everyone wants to hear about the lawsuit, but and where it is and all that. But first, let's talk a little bit about music. I mean, after all, you are a musician and we are a music program. So I understand that you spent 2 years assembling this band. Now, that tells me you were looking for something very special. How would you describe what you were looking for when you put The Slants together?
Well, number one, I wanted to find a group of musicians who had direct experience or understanding of the perspective of what it's like to be an Asian American in this country. But number two, I wanted people with some solid chops. Like, they needed to be able to play the music and have some experience on stage. I didn't want to kind of start from scratch in terms of assembling a group where I had to teach them how to play music or teach them how to perform. So it made it a little more challenging because I needed to find experienced musicians who were of Asian descent or understood the culture. And I was doing it in Portland, Oregon, which is often known as America's whitest city. So it took a little bit before we could kind of, everything could line up for that to happen. Yeah. But it was a fascinating journey because I remember when I was looking for musicians and I kind of posted ads and talked about what I was doing. Sometimes I would get calls or emails from people who were really upset saying I was racist because I wanted to find people who were Asian to join my band. it was like they were upset that they couldn't join if they weren't Asian or didn't understand what I was trying to do, which is just really funny because I kind of responded. I would say, well, hey, are all girl bands, are they sexist for excluding men? And they'd be like, no, that's different. It was just like very apparent that people didn't really quite grasp it. They couldn't understand it. And I think because there weren't any other examples out there, like they just couldn't really comprehend what that would be like to have an actual all Asian band.
And now you have an all Asian band, and you know that this conversation reminds me of the conversation that went on when Scarlett Johansson was chosen as the star of the manga based movie that just came out, The Ghost of the Shell. You know,
yeah.
So it works different ways. Well, let's give our audience an idea of the sound that you were looking for. This is the song Endlessly Falling from your new EP, The Band That Must Not Be Named. I chose that song first because it's a very good example of the band's separate instrumental power and chops and also its vocal sounds. And you've really nicely mixed sort of a smooth melodic vocal with high energy guitars and almost, but not quite, a punk wall of sound. And I love the sophisticated drumming you got back there too. So can you give us a little bit more of what you were looking for in the sound and why that it, and is this it now?
I think we're getting there. I think we're probably still finding it out because this is a fairly new lineup. You know, we actually did used to have much more of like a kind of punk swagger to our music. But over the last year, we decided we wanted to switch and have something that was much more pop centric, still have that same kind of attitude and energy where it's kind of driving. But at the same time, we wanted it to be catchy. We wanted like great hooks in terms of the melodies and the vocals, something that people could really kind of sing along with. And so Endlessly Falling, I think, is a good example of like how our sound is evolving into that.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but your fans actually call your music Chinatown dance music. And
Chinatown dance rock.
And it's definitely danceable, but I think that it actually goes beyond just the danceable beats because it also delivers a message. I want to play a little bit of From the Heart here.
Sorry if my notes too sharp. Sorry if my voice too raw. Don't make the pen a weapon and censor our intelligence until it costs me nothing at all. Sorry if you take offense, made a fool to play pretend. I know you fear change, it's something so strange, but nothing's gonna get in our way. There's no room for your backwards feelings, the backyard feelings. We're never gonna settle, never gonna settle. No, we won't remain silent, no. It's our defining moment, we sing from the heart.
Okay. Now, if you listen carefully to the lyrics there, there was some message, and I want to read some of the lyrics too. No, we won't remain silent. No, it's our defining moment. We sing from the heart. We sing from the heart. No, we won't be complacent. No, it's a rock and roll nation. We sing from the heart. We sing from the heart. Now, I understand that was a reference to hashtag Act to Change, the bullying, anti-bullying organization. Is that right?
We actually wrote the song before then, but in December of last year, the White House emailed us saying, hey, because you guys are champions of the Asian American community, would you be willing to let us use a song for this compilation album with Barack and Michelle Obama, Jeremy Lin, George Takei, all these people?
Ooh.
And so, of course, we said, yeah, I mean, we're very passionate about fighting oppression and using our music to do so. And so that's why we actually have that. But the song itself is more like an open letter to the trademark office and people who have kind of who don't like our name, who don't like what we're trying to do with what we're doing.
Okay. And now in that song, you say it's a rock and roll nation. Now, how does that affect your message and your activism or lack of it?
Well, I think it's just kind of like a little bit reference of like America is like, you know, this is the birthplace of rock and roll and of things that were a little bit more edgy. But because of that, like we know that arts and activism go hand in hand. And this is why it's so critical to protect things like free speech, because like this is the kind of country we've built. And these are our values and we need to honor those values. And for us, that of course is a message to the trademark office, like, yes, you should allow us to register our band's trademark, and like we're gonna fight for it because that's rock and roll. Like that's what it's all about.
Yay! Okay. Well, have you and the band always been on the front lines of standing up for marginalized communities?
I would say it hasn't always been that way. Like when we first started this band, I just wanted it to be about representation because there's such a lack of Asian Americans in entertainment. But quickly after we started, we started getting these like handwritten letters and emails from Asian American youth just thanking us for existing, like saying like, thank you for showing me this is possible. And from that moment on, I realized that it was really important for us to exist, that it was significant. Whether we liked it or not, we would be kind of considered role models. And so we wanted to use that platform to do more than just deliver great music. We wanted to be able to talk about important social issues that were like near to our hearts as well.
Well, you do that both in the words and in the music. The lyrics of that song are in your face, but they're oppositional, they're determined. But the music is also oppositional and determined. There's no retreat in that music. There's no break. The vocals just rise and they level off and they rise again another notch. And even the breakdown with the guitar solo, it keeps the pressure on. Now, when you write songs like that, do you deliberately arrange them to keep the pressure on to make the dancers think while they're moving?
No, I think it's just a lot of times we write music first. Usually me or the guitarist will kind of begin with some kind of guitar hook or riff, and we just kind of layer on the kind of the vocals or the lyrics as we just think about the motion or tenor of the song. And so it just kind of naturally erupts. It's not necessarily to think like, okay, we're going to have people, you know, think about racial identity and cultural dynamics. Well, it's just like, no, this is what we want to say. This is what's coming from our heart.
Okay.
And so that's kind of it makes us sound way more sophisticated than we are. But.
We're talking with Simon Tam of The Slants about their music, their tour, and in a moment, their case before the Supreme Court. You can talk with them, too. You can call in 347-215-7511, or you can email us, and several of you have already emailed us, and we'll get to those emails in a few minutes. You can email us at musicfridaylive@gmail.com. Okay, let's talk about the Supreme Court. I know you have probably explained this until you can do it in your sleep, but for the, you know, the half dozen listeners out there in the country who is not familiar with Lee versus Tam, what is it? Why did you sue the trademark office, and where does the case stand now?
So Lee versus Tam is our case that's pending before the Supreme Court right now. It originally started about 8 years ago when I was recommended to file an application to register a band's trademark. It's something that's really common for bands to do, not only to protect your merchandising rights and making sure that, you know, venues aren't selling tickets to the wrong band, but it's also important if you want to get things like sync licensing agreements or to sign on a record label. We applied after going through a couple of major national tours and after really making sure our name was established. But the trademark office rejected our application. They said that they rejected it on the basis of the slants being a racial slur or being derogatory towards Asians, even though we're all Asian and we use the term in this kind of reappropriated, self-empowering kind of way. And even though out of the hundreds and hundreds of events we've done, we've never received a formal complaint by anyone who had issue with our name. So we decided to challenge that, and we appealed through numerous courts, finally getting to something called the Federal Circuit, which is right below the Supreme Court. And in that court, we won. 9 out of 12 federal judges said that what the trademark office is doing actually violated our First Amendment rights, that are abridging those rights, and that the law they're using was outdated and needed to go. Even the judges who disagreed with that position agreed that we should have our trademark, that the trademark office is wrong. So that was fantastic. A huge win, like a landmark victory, one of the biggest intellectual property cases of 2015. The trademark office didn't like that decision, so they decided to defy federal court orders for a number of months, and then they finally appealed to the Supreme Court, which took it up, and that's where we were in January to listen to it.
And so, this was last year during the Obama administration.
Yeah. Yeah.
And President Obama had invited you to be on the album with him.
Yes.
I guess the courts didn't notice that.
No. The funny thing is that we've actually been doing work for the government for a while. We spent our holidays overseas performing for troops who are serving because the Department of Defense wanted us to do more Asian American cultural outreach to soldiers. We've played for federal prisons, for senators, for diplomats visiting from China, Korea, and Japan. All the while the trademark office is saying, oh no, you're actually racist towards Asian people. Even though they could not find a single Asian American who was offended by our name. The only evidence they had was using urbandictionary.com, so like a wiki joke site, and then using photographs of Miley Cyrus pulling her eyes back in an offensive gesture. So they based their entire case off of this. And even, I actually went to the Supreme Court in person to hear these arguments unfold. And Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, even when she was questioning the government attorney, she said, doesn't it matter that everybody knows that the slants are Asian and what they're doing is, you know, actually removing the sting from the word? And the only thing that the guy could reply with was, well, we found some articles on the internet. Oh, I mean, God. It was just so absurd because, like, you know, you can't even, like, write a junior high school report using Wikipedia nowadays, and yet the Department of Justice and the U.S. Trademark Office is doing so in our case.
Well, it sounds like you're going to win. We've got some emails here I want to get to, more music-oriented, actually. But like I say, it sounds like you're going to win this one. Willie in San Francisco wants to know, will we ever see you play up in San Francisco? You got anything planned?
Yeah, we're actually playing there this Sunday, April 2nd, in Oakland, actually, at a venue called The New Parish. So we're playing with our friends, The New Up, and a singer-songwriter named Go Nakamura. And so that's Sunday evening.
Okay, got that, Willie. You should be there. Ramona in Whittier wants to know if you ever team up with singers from China like Lu Qi and Tian Zhen, who I don't know. But do you ever sing up Chinese singers from China?
We haven't yet. Most of the acts we've worked with that kind of come from overseas have been performing live with them, and those are usually bands touring from Japan. Although we did do a tour across Asia last year, we toured the island of Taiwan and did this major like Southeast Asian music festival for a couple of days on the beach, which was absolutely incredible.
I'll bet. Thomas in Seattle wants to know how you avoided being a grunge band.
maybe it helps that I was born and raised in San Diego. I don't know.
Okay. Well, we are about to run out of time, but I wanted to play a little bit of Fight Back, and so our audience can hear that side of you. Here it comes. That is Fight Back from the band that must not be named. I love the intro there. Those first four bars, is that a synth or did you pluck a violin and then loop it?
That was a synth that I programmed. I just kind of had this idea in my mind to kind of start off with this kind of like gentle thing that would kind of reoccur throughout the song. But the very, very like beginning actually didn't happen till maybe the day before, like when we were in the studio and we were just like, we need to rearrange this song. So I thought, hey, maybe if we tried this little thing, and it ended up working out pretty well.
We've got about 20 emails here who want to know if you played your music for the Supreme Court.
No, unfortunately they didn't let us do that, but we did, do a song like on the steps of the Supreme Court during the week while we're in DC, and so there's a video of that online. And actually, for folks who are interested, we did a couple of video blogs from our time in Washington DC while at the Supreme Court. It's kind of funny because most of the time when I was there, I spent on the phone doing interviews or doing emails. I had like 21,000 calls. In 8 days. So a lot of the video blog is that, or kind of portions of us running around, but it was such an incredible experience. And we're going back to DC. So maybe we'll stop by the court and do a song.
And of course you probably can't send copies of the CDs to the judges because that would be considered bribing a judge, I suppose.
Yeah, maybe afterwards, after they let us win.
after you win. Well, we are out of time, which means we're not going to be able to play Level Up. So all of our listeners need to go listen to you on Spotify or Pandora, or better yet, buy your albums.
The new EP is only $5, and you can get that on iTunes, CD Baby, or at any of our shows. We're going to be on the road for the next 6 weeks. We got almost 60 appearances, so you can go to theslamps.com and see where we're going to be.
Now you've got a gig tonight in Portland, don't you?
Yeah, we'll kick off the tour tonight, so in about like eight or 9 hours.
Okay, all right. Well, thanks so much for spending the time with us before you do that. And let no one say Asians can't rock, because you guys do. Thank you so much for joining us today, Simon.
Oh, thank you for having me.
This is Simon Tam of the band The Slants, or the band that must not be named. Follow them at www.theslants.com. Check out their videos on YouTube and also that video blog from the Supreme Court. Stream their music on Spotify or Pandora. Listen on iHeartRadio. These guys are everywhere. Better yet, however, buy the tracks on their discography page on their website. And don't forget the tour. It starts tonight in Portland at the Analog Theater. They're going to be all over the place. They're going to be down in San Diego April 2nd. So you have plenty of opportunity to see them. We're going to take a break right now. And when we return, the magical music of Gail Skidmore. Don't go away. You're not going to want to miss this. But first, let's take a little trip to Mexico.
Just 2 hours south of the California border lies the enchanting seaside town of San Felipe, Baja California, where friendly people, warm waters, and a relaxing vacation awaits. And it all starts at www.mysanfelipevacation.com. Whether you choose to golf on the 18-hole championship course overlooking the Sea of Cortez with friends, enjoy a romantic weekend for two on the beach, or take the whole family for a fun-filled weekend of shopping and activities, you'll be sure to find just the right accommodations at mysanfelipevacation.com. So what are you waiting for? Isn't it time you got away? Visit www.mysanfelipevacation.com today. That's www.mysanfelipevacation.com. See you in San Felipe.
And I'll see you in San Felipe, too. If you're in Southern California or Arizona, there is a fabulous vacation waiting for you only a half day's drive away in San Felipe on Mexico's Sea of Cortez. You can golf, you can swim, you can take the family clanning, you can tour galleries, you can dine on Mexico's finest seafood or even fly an ultralight. And you can do all of that. You can do all of that while staying in a luxury condo, a budget studio apartment, or even a private sandcastle in the dunes. The key to all this is mysanfelipevacation.com. That's mysanfelipevacation.com. It's a place for accommodations in San Felipe, La Hacienda Beach, and even the mountainside homes and stunning El Dorado Ranch. So for a getaway weekend or a week's escape, go to mysanfelipevacation.com. And best of all, if you put in the code MFLA5, that's MFLA5, you get a 5% discount. Remember, that's mysanfelipevacation.com. The discount code is MFLA5. You'll be glad you did. Gail Skidmore is a balancing act. She sings in the line between artistry and accessibility, between heartbreak and loss, between now and nostalgia, between what is and what could fantastically be. She's classically trained on the piano from the age of four. She's a songwriter since the age of eight. Her songs are at once old and lived in and young and dreamy. She tours, records, and plays over 20 instruments, often crammed in her little car while she races from concert to concert. But somehow, she finds time to make origami and bake cookies for her fans. And along the way, she has written over 2,000 songs, recorded 20 albums, each one an unforgettable emotional undertaking. She's opened for Jason Mraz, Lisa Loeb, Steve Martin, Sarah Watkins, Sam Phillips. She's shared the stage with similar lights. She's ready to release her first full-length vinyl album, The Golden West, which leaves many ghosts behind, but also surfaces some memories that probably won't ever leave. Gail Skidmore, I have been listening to your songs all week, and let me say it's an honor to finally talk with you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Gail, I know that you're on tour now with a show coming up next week in San Diego, but you actually live in Amsterdam. So what took you to Holland from sunny San Diego?
I followed my heart to Holland. I got married in August to a Dutch man.
Great answer. Well, the album, The Golden West, and we'll get to why that title later, is deeper and more poetic than the songs of, say, the album Sleeping Bear or Make Believe. You've said that you wrote it to exercise Ghost, and you finished it a week before your wedding. Did the Ghost need excising before you got married?
Well, I think that it's good to just be reflective before you get married and acknowledge what you need to leave behind and what you want to take with you. So, sure.
Well, okay. Well, this album does it. Let's hear a little bit of it. I want to play Pale Ghosts. Training certainly shows there, but what really struck me there is your voice and the whistling. Is that you whistling?
Yes, it is. I get that from my grandpa on my mom's side.
Oh, that's quite a skill. I mean, I can't do that. You have to
I
learn
had to work
that?
On it. Yeah,
yeah, okay.
I worked on it for a long time.
Well, now you've given me a new challenge as soon as I get over my cold.
Right.
When was the writing and the recording of that cathartic? I mean, did it close doors so you could open new ones?
Yeah, I really find that songs like that, that are about something like deeply personal, emotional, it really helps to move forward if I can, you know, get the song out the way that I hoped to record it and kind of get to release something with that.
Where did the title The Golden West come from?
That came from the song. It's the third song on the album, and it was the first single. And it's a song about leaving things behind. And I left things behind both emotionally and physically with this album, with the move and just kind of recording all of these songs and getting them out there.
Yeah, that's, moving from San Diego to Amsterdam is you leave some things behind, like sunshine.
There isn't any sun there.
Oh, come on. I've been to Amsterdam
like
for 30 days.
Oh, yeah, here and there. But.
Well, The Golden West is going to be your 20th indie release. Now, I know that 3 or 4 years ago, you had a meeting with a label executive who turned out to be more misogynistic than musical. Did that experience convince you to stay indie?
It was one of several experiences that convinced me to stay indie. Unfortunately, several of those experiences were similar to that one and pretty negative. It's tough being a woman in the industry. I mean, it's just a tough industry for everybody, but I think women in the industry get targeted. I don't know what the rate is compared to men being targeted, but
probably depends on the city you're in.
Yeah, I think it probably does. But unfortunately, I had some weird experiences with people who really just didn't care about my music or my art. They just wanted to get whatever they wanted out of it. And I really want to keep creating and doing things the way that I want to do them. So I'm an artist, you know, like artists don't want people telling them how to carve their sculptures or how to write a song. It's just never been my journey. So that helped me to remember that I want to be independent and do my songs the way that I think they should be done.
Well, you know, if you're in L.A. tonight, you could attend Girls Rock L.A. and see a celebration of women in music, all of whom are indie and all of whom are indie. So just keep that in mind. All right. There's a national organization here in the United States called Girls Rock that tries to take care of those problems. Well,
I love that. That's great.
Yay. So come on up and see us. Now, the album took a while to assemble. It took you a year, four cities and four producers. Is that sort of normal for you?
No.
Oh, no, it's not. Okay.
Not normal. I started the project. I did most of the project with James Book. He is the marketing director at Ninkasi Brewing in Eugene, Oregon. And we originally wanted to do an EP, and then we just got a little bit ambitious and did 10 songs instead. And so he and I worked together at Ninkasi Studios and then down at Rancho de la Luna. But we just didn't get everything done, and we just ran out of time. So I had to go elsewhere to finish the record. But James and I did most of the album together.
Okay. All right. Well, it certainly paid off. I want to play another song. This is Only Ever You, and it's my favorite song on the album. Loaded. Did it come easy?
No. That was a tough one for me to write. I lost someone really close to me, and that was a song that I worked on for quite a while. So.
You have Dave Ketching on playing guitar on that song. And for those who don't know, Dave is a touring member of the Eagles of Death Metal. You don't strike me as a death metal girl. How did that happen?
I love that band. Dave was actually a friend of James Book from Ninkasi, and they set up that recording session with me and with Vocab Company, which is another San Diego band. They're hip hop, and then Haunted Summer, which is another of the Ninkasi artists. So we all went out to the desert together and recorded parts of our albums there. And Dave just felt inspired by the song and sat down and started playing and asked if he could play on the song. I was like, wow. Yes, absolutely. And I'm a big fan. It was really cool.
And you just jogged something in my memory. Dave's the founder of that studio, isn't he? Of the Rancho de la Luna? Yeah.
That's
okay.
His studio.
So you were out there, and for our listeners across the country who don't know, Rancho de la Luna is in Joshua Tree National Monument, or actually just sort of outside of it. There's a little music community there and some studios there. I've never been to the studio. I've been to Joshua Tree many times, which is a hauntingly beautiful place. What was it like to record out there in Joshua Tree?
It was very inspiring. I mean, there's so much history in that studio, and there were so many quirky little instruments around, and Dave just kind of let us have reign of the studio for a bit and just experiment with everything in there. And it's just like beautiful sunsets and just a great place to hang out and
wild cactus
dream.
And gorgeous rocks. Yeah, it really is.
So it was very inspiring.
I recommend all my listeners on the East Coast that you Google Joshua Tree National Monument, and you'll see where she was when she made this. And meanwhile, let me just remind everybody, we're talking with Gail Skidmore, and you can talk with her too. You can call in 347-215-7511, or we're getting email. So you can email Music Friday live@gmail.com. And real quick, why don't we just read you some of these emails here? Alejandro in Los Angeles. And, Alejandro wants to know if you won the NPR Tiny Desk concert. Were you competing for the NPR Tiny Desk? And did you win?
Yeah, I've competed twice, and no, I didn't win. But I had fun doing it.
Oh, too bad. All right. Well, there's your answer, Alejandro. And I don't know, maybe do audience people vote for that, or is it all judged by NPR?
I think it's all judged by NPR.
Okay. Well, Alejandro, if she's up again, you should call NPR and tell them you're going to drop your membership if they don't give her the prize, okay? Mehmet in Austin wants to know if you've ever played at South by Southwest.
I have done a bunch of little indie showcases at South by, and I think one officially sanctioned event. But yeah, I've been there, I think, 4 times. I just was out there a couple, like 2 weeks ago,
wow.
Whatever that was.
Okay, and here's one from Braxton in Dallas, who's obviously been following you because he wants to know, do you sell your coloring books separately?
Yes, I do. I have them up on Bandcamp, gailskidmore.bandcamp.com, and I sell them separately. So.
Okay, you hear that, Braxton, and everybody out there. It's not where you normally look for books, but go to Bandcamp, find her on Bandcamp, and I wouldn't have known that. I would look for them on Amazon or something. Let's play a song about memories, but these aren't about ghosts. This is Hourglass.
I remember when we were young, when everything had just begun. Our hopes were in the sky. Our heads held high. I remember first feeling light in the heat of a summer night. Our hearts were racing. Our minds were changed.
Now, I understand that's about childhood with your grandparents. It's nostalgic, but as you sing in the lyrics, I remember when life was new. It's the pleasure of nostalgia, not the pain. How did that song find its way into this album?
Well, this album was about moving forward and kind of cleansing from the past. But some of those, I think that, you know, happy memories can be a kind of pain in their own. And there are places and people in our lives that we hang on to that we want to get back to. And you kind of know it's never going to be quite the same when you go back to them. And I wrote that about just longing for that time in my past. And so I really felt like this song fit on the album because it's something that I can hang on to in a certain way, but I had to let it go in this negative way of like just that ache for those times, not place. I wanted to hang on to it in a way that was more positive. So that was about time up in Puget Sound with my family and just wishing for that time. And I actually lost my grandpa 2 weeks before my wedding. So It has become even more poignant for me to have that on the record.
You know, as I told you earlier, that we have a saying around here that lyrics aren't dead. We just call them poetry now. And I think you just explained why. You said earlier that the album became more than you intended. You actually had started to do an EP and it just kept growing, which may be why it took you a year and 4 cities and 4 producers. But you've recorded so much that you must have the craft of creating albums down so well that you know how to you have a plan and you know how to accomplish it. And I wonder, given what you've said, if this album didn't experience mission creep as like it did, because it was always there to start with?
Yeah, I think that might be. I mean, working with my friend Brandon O'Connell here in San Diego, just really felt like it was like meant to be for the record. He and I have been doing commercial music together. I mean, I'm a session artist mostly, but I have done some writing. We, over the last couple of years, have learned to work really well together. And I always thought I wanted to record an album with him, but I didn't ever have the opportunity. And since this album ended up the way it did, I ended up going to Brandon for the last bit of the record. And it was so fun. And I just felt like he brought this extra element to the record that should have always been there. So I definitely agree that it was meant to be.
We've got a number of emails here asking you if you're in the United States permanently, and you're not. You just said you live in Amsterdam, but B, if you're touring while you're here.
Yes, I just am at the very end of my tour. I have one big show left at the Casbah on Tuesday in San Diego, and it's an album pre-release tour, so it's a chance to get the vinyl and coloring book before it comes out on April 7th. But I will be going back to Amsterdam right after that on the 9th, and then I'll be touring around and doing like Record Store Day and the Netherlands while I'm there, doing a couple of record stores, and then I'll be touring around Europe, and then I'll be back to the States in the fall. So you can find out about that on my website and join a mailing list if you don't have commitment issues.
Okay. Right. So remember, everybody, all my listeners down in San Diego, including all my in-laws down there, you're going to be at the Casbah Tuesday night, and that will be a pre-release party for your album. We just got an email in from Smash in Hollywood, and he wants to know, what's the difference between touring in Europe and touring in the United States? Interesting.
There's many differences. I really love touring over here, and you know, there's a lot of places in the States that are really special to me. But I think for me personally, and I know for several other artists that I know, it's been a little bit more supportive in the last couple of years in Europe as far as listening rooms go. It's a little bit more consistent for me to find places where people are there just specifically to listen to the music. I mean, as opposed to like going there to be a part of a scene or something like that, you know, to kind of socialize. It's like about the music.
I know what you mean. And of course, Los Angeles lost one of its major listening rooms when the Wits Inn closed in Venice, but we still have a few, the Hotel Cafe being particularly the new small room at the Hotel Cafe, which is set up just to be a listening room. So
yeah,
very much to if you ever play there, I'll be sure to be there. You had mentioned your coloring books, and they're available on Bandcamp. But just tell us about the new coloring book and where people should go to get it, and do you have bigger plans for it?
I have lots of plans for it. This one was really exciting for me because I won a grant to be able to do it, and so I got to do a bit more with it. Being independent, I don't always get to do things on the scale that I would like. So this one was really fun. I got to make it a bigger book and a longer book. And I initially started doing the coloring books because I'm a lyrics person. I think they're important. And I always liked looking in the lyrics of albums that I would get. But then I found that I didn't really have anything to do with them. I'm like, okay, I have this little square folded piece of paper and I'm going to look at it like once or twice and then, I don't know, throw it away, recycle it. So I really wanted to find a way to have my album be more interactive and have people be able to do something with it. So I like to paint when I listen to an album or draw or something, and I thought that would be fun for people who like my music to be able to kind of have a whole cathartic experience listening to the record, not just relaxing listening to music, but also painting or drawing. So I did the coloring books. And now that's become a big thing. I like to think I started it, haha. And I'm hoping to find another publisher for the book and get it out there, like kind of expose people to my art and my music in another avenue, like just bookstores if I can.
Well, I certainly wish you great luck on that. I would look forward to it. And in the meantime, go to your page on Bandcamp and take a look at them. Well, we're almost out of time, but we do have time for one more song, and I wanted to end with a song that's kind of different than the other ones. This is Honeybee. Honeybee, and somehow I don't think you were banishing a ghost with that song. So did you just decide to let the bee buzz around among the other songs and make people smile?
Yeah. I've always kind of found it difficult to write upbeat, happy songs because I think a lot of them are cheesy, and maybe that one's a little cheesy too, but I hope it's in a good way. But I wrote it in Santa Barbara, and it just made me really happy, so I wanted it on the record because it felt like it fit somehow.
Is the bee going to be in a coloring book?
There is a picture for that, but it's actually not a bee. It's a heron, and there's a long story about that. So.
Which, unfortunately, we don't have time for right now,
no.
But it sounds like I'm going to have to have you back on just so we can find out how a bee becomes a heron.
Sounds good.
Well, there's a producer buzzing around me right now with a clock, so we are going to have to say goodbye. You're going to be in the States until at least Tuesday, because you have a show on April 4th at the Casbah in San Diego. And once again, that's an album release show. Where's the best place for people to get your music?
I'm all over the place. Bandcamp, I think I have 16 albums. I mean, I'm on iTunes and all that stuff. But if you want the older stuff, it's on Bandcamp, GailSkidmore.bandcamp.com.
Okay. And you can also be streamed on Spotify. But as I always tell people, it's best to buy your music. And if they do, they get the coloring books, right?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Gail Skidmore, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today and for bringing us the wonderful music, the music that's on all those lines that covers so many wonderful things. I just really appreciate it. And I want to recommend everybody to go and at least listen to you on Spotify. So thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to Music Friday Live with Patrick O'Heffernan and his cold and stuffed up nose. We're coming to you from the CyberStation USA network, the Blog Talk Radio network, and our radio affiliates. Like our Facebook page and follow our Twitter feeds and get real-time updates on our guests. Our producer is Lars Christensen. Our program director is Jason Bartleben. Our wonderful intern, who now has her own radio show, is Angeline Serrano. You can download this and every other Music Friday program at blogtalkradio.com, or you can find us on iTunes. Tune in next week. Next week, we're going to talk with Gerard Faber and Lauren Ruth Ward. That's going to be a very interesting show. So check out our Twitter stream and our Facebook page, and we'll keep you updated on our guests. We may have surprise guests like we did today when Allison Arietta dropped in on us. And in the meantime, have a great musical weekend, and we're going to leave you with a little bit more of Honeybee.